I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, everyone says that keeping boys out of girls' sports is an 80-20 issue. Well, we're about to find out if that's true. Plus, Elon Musk weighs in on Seattle's radical public schools. And when it comes to your pocketbook feeling a little bit thin, Governor Bob Ferguson wants the focus to be on Donald Trump, not him. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show. That's how this show is possible. For just $5 a month by becoming a paid subscriber, go to undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. And just click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. And thank you for allowing us to take a vacation. You really are the best bosses ever. We do appreciate it. Maybe we'll talk about our vacation a little later on in the show, but we don't have time for pleasantries. We have to get back to the business of Common Sense. So much has happened since we've been on hiatus or holiday, as the Europeans call it. Now I'm all Parisian and fancier than everyone. So there's very few opportunities, I think, that we actually get, short of like elections, to really gauge whether this thing that we're all fighting and working toward, a return to sanity and common sense, is actually feasible in a state like Washington, where we feel like and we fear and we see things going so drastically in the wrong direction, and so antithetical, really, to the idea of common sense. So I think we have an opportunity to see whether the people of Washington State have it in them, whether they're willing to push back in a way that I think, to me, is the safest way for them to do it, to push back against something that is so clearly dumb and so clearly illogical. So our friends at Let's Go Washington, which of course were behind the slew of initiatives that have been pushed over the last couple years, have dropped two new initiatives. And I have to say, I love these, because they're so different from the previous initiatives. I mean, one of them is exactly the same, but I'll explain what I mean by different. So conservatives for a long time in states like Washington or on the West Coast have, I think, shied away from culture war issues, because they're thinking, gosh, you know, we're in the minority and we're trying to get people in the middle. And so we don't want to wade into what can be very controversial topics. We'll stick to like the kitchen table, economic issues, public safety, etc. This doesn't do that. And I think it's time for something like this. So the first of these two initiatives, which is 638, it's technically the full is IL26-638. It is going to gauge whether keeping biological boys out of girls' sports is actually an 80-20 issue. I think it's more than that. I've said this a lot. If privately polled, I think the people of this country, 95% of them would say, no, we should not allow boys to participate against girls at any level. But specifically, you know, I think in high school, when you have, you know, such a huge difference biologically, and then you get into, you know, competitive sports in the NCAA and the Olympics, like by no means should we allow a man to compete against a woman. But here we're talking about high school sports in Washington State, and that's what this initiative would do. It would prohibit students, it defines as biologically male, from competing with or against female students in interscholastic activities that are intended for female students only. This is the epitome of common sense. And I've tried to get away from and push people away from painting this as a culture war issue, because it's not. To me, it really is a litmus test of whether you have good plain common sense or you don't, whether you're able to see things logically and speak simple truths, and not bend, you know, in a state that wants to say, we follow the science, and then wants to allow people to change the gender on their birth certificate. Like, that's not scientific. You can't just become, no matter how many surgeries you have, no matter how you want to dress, you can't just become a different gender. And so this, to me, a few things. This, to me, is going to be a gauge on whether Washington State is salvageable. If Let's Go Washington cannot get enough signatures on this to qualify it to send it to the legislature, I don't know if Washington State is salvageable, because it's such a common sense thing. The other thing this is going to gauge is whether people in Olympia, elected leaders, actually work for you, whether they work for themselves and their political party and their cronies in places like the teachers union. I feel like we already know the answer to that based on history, but this is an initiative to the legislature. I don't feel very strongly about that. And I haven't told Brian Haywood this, but I would rather it be an initiative to the people, frankly, because we've already seen what the legislature does to with initiatives to the legislature. They will pass them, and then they'll come around and they'll gut them. And so to me, send it to the people, send it to the ballot. I know it's a little more difficult to qualify in that way, but let people in Washington state actually say, oh no, we want boys to compete against girls. So instead, this is an initiative to the legislature, although that's still good because it would put lawmakers on the record on this issue. And so far, they haven't had to be on the record on this issue. So you send it to them and you make them either ignore it or reject it. Or hopefully pass it and then leave it alone and say, hey, the people have spoken. We got hundreds of thousands of signatures on this. And yeah, it just makes sense for us to say boys can't compete against girls. And we've had so many stories in this regard. And to any members of the media, of the mainstream media, who actually want to cover this issue fairly, there is no shortage of young female athletes in the state of Washington who are willing to speak up about it, who are willing to come do interviews with you and tell you how this issue is impacting them. In fact, we featured two of them on Truth Tellers while we were on vacation, Frances Stout and Annalee Wilson, who have become such important voices in this debate, both female athletes who have taken a stand for themselves and against the state leaders who continue to thrust biological boys into girls' spaces.
What is that like for you as a young woman to see our state leaders oppose protecting you?
It's frustrating, and it just feels like totally like what about us? Like, I get you're trying to help them, but you're ignoring a whole other like group.
I do have an issue with our state school superintendent, Chris Reichdahl. I think that he has failed us as students and athletes, and you can't live in this false world and hide away and say, oh, this isn't going on, and put yourself in the eyes of a high school student who is trying to get through her 4 years and play the sports that she enjoys and have a safe space to change in a locker room without having someone of the opposite sex look at her.
Yeah, and this initiative really is about, do you stand with girls or do you stand against them? There is not any sort of middle ground. It's either you stand with girls or you stand against them. And we're talking about such a small percentage of the number of high school athletes in Washington state who are being protected by people like Bob Ferguson, Chris Reichdahl, and the Attorney General Nick Brown, the most powerful politicians in our state, all men, by the way. The lengths they have gone to protect the small number of boys who want to compete against girls and totally ignore and tread on the young women who are trying to enjoy their 4 years in high school. Some of them, like Annalee, she could be a college athlete. She could go to college and get scholarships for track. But Lord only knows if she keeps losing to biological boys, whether a recruiter is going to dig deeper and say, oh, well, she got smoked by this person and they don't know that it's actually a man because they haven't dug any deeper than that. And by the way, Annalee has reached out to Governor Bob Ferguson. Annalee and her family have reached out to Superintendent of Public Instruction Chris Reichdahl to say, hey, just meet with me. Just hear my story from my perspective. You're going to all these great lengths, pushing back against the Trump administration, suing the Trump administration to try to continue to allow biological boys to race against me and beat me. At least hear my side of the story. And they haven't responded. Does that really surprise anyone? So now we have an opportunity, the common sense people of Washington state, to do what should have been done all along. To say, no, if you're a biological boy, you can't compete against girls. And so that is going to be through this initiative. Now, there are two initiatives that Let's Go Washington has released. That's one of them. The other is IL-26-001. What would this do? Well, we're going to give the old parental rights another shot. Remember one of the last initiatives that Let's Go Washington had put forth, gathered enough signatures for, was successfully sent to the legislature, that the legislature passed into law, was the Parental Bill of Rights. And what did they do? They came back the next year, last year, and they gutted it. Well, actually, that was technically this year, right? Gosh, time flies. They gutted it. So in 2024, they said, oh, well, we got this initiative from the people and they want parents' rights and education, so we'll just pass it and then we'll come back in 2025 and we'll gut it.
And we'll claim that the initiative is just hateful and bigoted. And it's all about, you know, trampling on the rights of transgender kids and it's dangerous. And that's what they painted it as. So remember I said earlier that these two initiatives, to me, they take on issues that conservatives have usually sort of stayed away from. And you might say, well, that's not true, Brandy, because this is basically just a redo of the Parental Rights Initiative. But when the last Parental Rights Initiative was introduced in Washington state, it really was about, and the framing of it from Let's Go Washington, it wasn't just about like culture war issues and radical gender ideology. It was about everything. Like, hey, parents should know what's happening from a disciplinary perspective in their kids' school. Parents should know, you know, if their school is seeing a mental health counselor, for instance. And yes, parents should know if their kid goes to school and identifies as Tammy instead of Timmy. But then what happened as that first initiative was being debated is the left turned it into, oh, this is about anti-LGBTQ. This is about transphobia and all of this. So this is Let's Go Washington saying, we don't care if you want to call us transphobes. We're going to continue to say and to believe that parents are the primary stakeholders in their kids' lives, and they have a right to know what's going on with schools, with their kids in school. And so I'm so happy that Let's Go Washington is not going to just back away from this and let it go, because the left has painted it as, if you support this, you're a transphobe. Because I think too often conservatives and moderate people have just scurried whenever anyone wants to throw a scary label at them. And Let's Go Washington is saying, we're not scurrying. As parents, we're not going to be painted as transphobes because we want to know what's happening with our kids. So IL-26001 would say, okay, let's reinstate the Parental Bill of Rights as it was in the form it was initially sent to the legislature the first time we tried this, before they went back and upended it. So a couple things on these initiatives before I get to what the superintendent of public instruction has to say about them, which is just beyond horrific. If you've signed previous Let's Go Washington initiatives, you're probably going to get a mailer with forms to fill out for this one. So I wouldn't worry too much for now, because that's really the route that they're going, is instead of saying they're still going to have them available, you know, to gather signatures out in the public at places. But they've really streamlined this process. If you sign the last ones, I guarantee you Let's Go Washington is going to put some of these initiatives in a nice envelope for you, and they're going to send it to you with a prepaid thing that you can send it back. So they're going to make this as easy as possible. It's your job when you get them to call your neighbors, call your friends, post on your community pages saying, hey, I have a copy of these initiatives. I'll come to you. I'll help you sign it. Come over to my house. You can sign it, whatever it is. So I don't think it's going to be particularly difficult to get one of these in front of you for you to be able to sign. The other question, of course, is in the eventuality that these get sent to the legislature. I think Let's Go Washington is so good at this by now. They're going to be able to get these qualified to send them to the legislature. The question is, what is the legislature going to do? Are they going to do what they did last time and, oh, we'll pass these and then we'll come back and we'll just gut them the next year? I don't know if it's that simple with the boys and girls sports thing. Because then they have to go on the record either supporting a ban on boys and girls sports or opposing it. And I think that's a much more precarious position, because this is a black and white issue. The Parental Bill of Rights is a little more complex, is a little more convoluted. They were able to spin a tale and gaslight voters into believing that upending it was righteous. But this is like, either you want dudes to play against girls or you don't. So I don't see how, it's not going to be as easy to gaslight voters on this issue, as long as the media is doing its job, right? So this is the beginning of what will be an experiment in figuring out whether Washington is salvageable through these two issues. If voters aren't willing to sign this in great enough numbers to say, hey, let's send this to the legislature to keep boys out of girls' sports, I don't know if Washington State is salvageable. And then in reinstating the Parental Bill of Rights, if the legislature once again gives a big middle finger to parents and says, we know better than you and we're going to tell you that again, I don't know if Washington State is salvageable. So at least at the end of this, however it shakes out, we'll know whether the state can be saved. And I think that there's some power in that, right? So what did Chris Reichdahl, the superintendent of public instruction, have to say? We have a ton on education today, by the way. Just nuts, nuts stuff. I can't get over this statement. It's so bad. It's so bad. I'm going to read the whole thing. These initiatives sound like a conflict between the interests of a millionaire initiative writer
And the members of our legislature who are elected to represent Washington's needs and adopt our state laws. OSPI and Superintendent Reichdahl's job, this is from the office, from a spokesperson, is to communicate, uphold, and enforce the law. Washington's anti-discrimination laws comply with federal civil rights and non-discrimination laws. So first thing, these initiatives sound like a conflict between the interests of a millionaire initiative writer and the members of our legislature. First of all, Brian is just the one who funds them. Brian can't send an initiative to the legislature all on his own, as you know. Hundreds of thousands of Washingtonians who the lawmakers in Olympia are supposed to serve are the ones who signed it and were able to get it sent to them. Hundreds of thousands of Washingtonians from all sides of the political spectrum last time said, yeah, we want parental rights in education. We want to know what's happening with our kids at school. And then these lawmakers who we're supposed to believe are representing the interests of the voters said, nah, screw you. So they're going to paint, they're going to use the same tactic they did last time. It's all about, oh, rich man bad. Rich man bad, forget about the hundreds of thousands of Washington voters who agree with him and who signed this and who want this, left, right, and center. Rich man bad. So it just shows how disconnected they are. And he wants to, his office wants to say, oh, this is about, you know, the people who are elected to represent Washington's needs in the legislature and adopt state laws. Well, part of that job is listening to voters who you agree with and who you disagree with. Part of that job is hearing feedback from constituents, right? Is it not? And I can't think of a more powerful form of feedback than the initiative and referendum process, which is the most direct, concrete way that Washingtonians can tell lawmakers in Olympia that they like or don't like something that they're doing. And they don't care. They just dismiss that as, oh, no. Just, you know, it's a recommendation driven by some rich man. It's insane to me. And it shows that Chris Reichdahl shouldn't be anywhere near state government, let alone in a position like his, where he's supposed to be working collaboratively with parents to make sure that their children get the best possible education. I will say it. I think he hates families that are conservative. I think he actually hates and despises. And this is, you know, all the social media posts he puts out on his personal Facebook in this regard. I think he actually hates and despises and looks down on families that don't agree with his politics and thinks you are less than. I can say that just definitively. So the statement goes on to say, states are permitted to provide greater protections for students than what is required by federal minimum standards, and Washington's laws fit squarely within the scope of what is allowed by federal law. OSPI will enforce our current laws as we are required to do in a constitutional democracy until Congress, the legislature, or voters change the law and or federal courts invalidate Washington state's laws. Are they really, do they really lack that much self-awareness? He says, oh, we'll do this until voters tell us otherwise. Voters literally told you otherwise. And what did you do? You gave them a big middle finger. When it came to the Parental Bill of Rights, voters literally told you otherwise. And you all passed it and then came and upended it. So no, you're going to do whatever you want to do until something forces you, whether it's losing elections or whether it's the federal government, you know, sues you and wins, or withholding federal funds. You're going to do what you want to do until you can't anymore. And clearly to you, you've said that the initiative process is not a deciding factor on what you're going to do and how you're going to vote and the laws that you're going to pass, because you genuinely don't care what the people of Washington state have to say or the feedback that they have to give you. That's just an insane statement. So we have a lot, I think, that's going to happen in the months ahead with these initiatives and how quickly they're able to gather signatures and what's going to happen when the legislative session begins. Again, I feel very confident that they'll get enough signatures to send these to the legislature. And so January is going to be crazy because these are two huge issues that are going to get a lot of attention when lawmakers have to decide, do we pass these initiatives or do we ignore them, right? But there is an increasing focus on what's happening in public schools in places like Washington State that continue to push these radical ideologies, that continue to ignore this huge subset of parents and families.
you know, and girls in the issue of boys and girls sports, you have like tens of thousands of young girls who are impacted by that, and maybe like five boys who want to be girls. And we already see what side Washington State leaders want to take. And then at the same time, the educational outcomes are not there. And I think more parents are starting to notice that, that, hey, you know, you might have parents that are progressive, but then they see that their kids aren't getting a good education. And they're sort of, they're bothered by that. So they might not be bothered by radical gender ideology being pushed on their kids because they love that. But when it comes to their kids not getting a quality education and our school's academic achievement just down in the gutter, then they start to wake up. And so, and again, there's a lot of national attention on this. I was gone when we were on vacation. I had put out, we got this tip on this reminder that the Seattle Public School District sent out to parents. And I thought, of course, I do this on vacation. I was like, ah, I don't want to, you know, kids are back in school. I don't want to hold this until we get back. And so I pushed it out publicly. And wow, did that take off. So Seattle Public Schools sent out this opt-out request for LGBTQ inclusive instruction. And it was kind of a reminder to parents as the new school year begins. Hey, there are some things that you can opt out of and some things that you are prohibited from opting out of, which is crazy, by the way. Parents should be able to opt their child out of anything. Anything. I don't care if you're a parent and you don't want your kid to learn about, like, I don't know, what is some stupid math equation? Like division.
Yeah.
Maybe sure. You're just, maybe you have algebra. Something against algebra.
Yeah.
And you're like, my kid's not taking that. I think as a parent, you should be able to do that.
Yeah.
I really do. So when it comes to radical gender ideology, absolutely, you should be able to opt your child out of that. But Seattle Public Schools says, no, you can't. This is crazy. It says, Seattle Public Schools works to provide a wide range of educational opportunities that reflect who students are, help them build empathy for others, and prepare them to be compassionate citizens of a diverse and changing world, which isn't the job of public schools, by the way. It is not the job of a public school to build empathy for others, to prepare kids to be compassionate citizens of a diverse and changing world. No, that's a family's job. Your job is to educate them. So let's start there. It says there is no option to opt students out of learning about particular identities or groups of people. This guidance is reinforced by OSPI, State Superintendent's Office, the policies of other major urban districts, including the states of California and New York, and the outcomes of federal cases around the country. We celebrate all students in SPS. So it's saying that you can't just opt your child out of lessons involving LGBTQ themes. So like, let's say that there is a book about, you know, a kid who is a boy but wants to be a girl, and it's gonna be read in class. You can't opt your child out of that. Pride Month stuff, can't opt your child out of it. You're not allowed to opt your child about learning about particular identities or groups of people in the Seattle Public School District, the largest school district in the state. So regardless of what your beliefs are and biology, what biology says, if your child is in the Seattle Public School District, your child is going to learn that a boy can poof become a girl, or a girl can poof become a boy, or a girl can be a boy and a girl, depending on the day. And they're saying you can't opt your kid out of that. How crazy is that? So I push that out. And if we can go to the Elon Musk thing. So I'm on vacation and Elon Musk shares it. And I was like, oh man, terrible time to be on vacation. My first Elon Musk retweet, by the way. I'm shocked it took so long. But I'm glad it was about something like this because it needs all possible attention and a ton of others. I mean, it's had like millions and millions of views, and Ted Cruz pointing it out as well. And, you know, to me, I know that Seattle's progressive. I know a lot of parents don't care if their kid is taught like a boy, their boy can be a girl, their girl can be a boy. But I also think there's a big chunk of, even in a city like Seattle, of parents who are going to take umbrage with the idea that they're being told by a public school district they fund with their taxpayer dollars that they cannot, as parents, opt their child out of something. Anything, really. And I do think that a lot of Seattle public school parents are going to have a problem with that, and do indeed have a problem with that. So Elon Musk sends it out, Ted Cruz sends it out, and we're on vacation, and so some of our friends in the media are, you know,
our actual friends in the media who actually do journalism are out there trying to get responses. And Ori Hoffman gets a response from the Seattle Public School District that just infuriated me. He says, in response to the backlash from the revelation that parents cannot opt out of LGBTQ material at Seattle Public Schools in violation of a Supreme Court ruling, the district claimed the screenshot of their website was misinformation and falsely claimed families can always opt their child out of sexual health education. So in response to this going viral on the internet, and what I shared was a screenshot of the Seattle Public School District's own website. And I even put a link to the full website in there because I love you to have as much access to, you know, information that hasn't been touched by other people. And they came out and said, well, that's misinformation. Parents can always opt their child out of sexual health education. And what they're doing there is gaslighting. What they're doing there is playing with words. What they're doing there is hoping that you'll hear, oh, misinformation. Parents can always opt their child out and you won't dig any further. So what they're referencing, the same website, has two sections. What you cannot opt your child out of. And yes, what you can opt your child out of. And so in that same website, which again, I provided a link to, it says sexual health education versus LGBTQ inclusive instruction. It says parents are their children's most important teachers. Yeah, right, you don't believe that. We encourage students to talk with their families about cultural values and topics like growth and development, gender and relationships. And it says that, so it has that whole section on LGBTQ inclusive instruction. There's no opt-out option for that. But it does say sexual health education, you can opt your kid out. If you ever want to opt your child out of sex ed, you can do that. And so that would include, because we know that the sex ed lessons in not only Seattle Public Schools, but across the state, we know that they're just dripping with radical gender ideology. So yes, you can opt your kid out of that at any time for any reason, even if it's not about like the gender part of it. And that's what SPS focused on. Oh no, what is Brandy and Elon Musk talking about? Of course you can opt your kids out of sex ed. But you can't opt your kid out of, and this is from their website, book readings that include LGBTQ plus characters, discussing bullying prevention, sharing pronouns, displaying posters or flags supporting the LGBTQ plus community, acknowledging Pride Month, or teaching LGBTQ history. So you cannot opt your child out of Pride Month. They're admitting that on the website. You can't opt your child out of learning about terms like transgender or gender identity for the purpose of increasing kindness. So no, if it's anything outside of sex ed, you cannot opt your child out of it in the Seattle Public School District. That's not misinformation. That's from their own website. So just two examples. And the reason why when I had posted this thing that Elon Musk shared, I was reposting this story that Libs of TikTok had shared where it was about a Washington State kindergarten sex ed class. So this is an example of something that you could opt your child out of. It's insane that it's actually happening, but this is a kindergarten sex ed class in the state of Washington. The objective of it, it's called the Gender Jamboree Lesson, taught to kindergartners, okay? The objective, kids can identify their own gender and name at least three gender identities. And the key message of this lesson, some people are boys, some people are girls, some people are both, and some people are neither. So that's an actual sex ed lesson being taught to kindergartners in Washington State. The Gender Jamboree. That you can leave kindergarten being able to name at least three gender identities and learn that you can be whatever gender you want. So if you're a parent, yes, you can opt your child out of crazy sex ed lessons like that. However, you have to know about it. So remember, we did a story on the gender wheel that was taught to, I think, fourth or fifth graders in the Olympia School District. And a representative from Planned Parenthood came in and taught kids using this weird wheel that was kind of orchestrated like a game, that gender is alive and changing all the time, that if you want, you can identify as a trans femme tree.
And the issue here is that parents had no idea that their kids were going to be taught about this and have this weird sex ed lesson from the Planned Parenthood. So how do you opt your child out of something you don't even know about? You can't. You can be mad about it after the fact, as some Olympia parents were, but the Seattle Public School District wants to act like, oh no, you can opt your kid out of sex ed stuff. Well, that's assuming that the parent knows and that they've had ample notice, because I think the Seattle Public School District requires 30 days in order to opt your child out. So did they tell parents about it? Do parents know what the curriculum is actually going to be? And then, of course, sex ed is totally different from the other wackadoo stuff that is being taught about LGBTQ plus stuff in our public schools. We've covered so much of this. Just a couple examples. Books, remember? That's one thing that, oh no, you can't just say that your kid can't be read a book with LGBTQ themes. Well, what about this book that was read in the Stanwood Comedo Island School District that said, when you were born, you couldn't tell people who you were or how you felt. They looked at you and made a guess. Maybe they got it right. Maybe they got it wrong. Yeah, so for parents, you can't opt your child out if the school wants to read them a book that says doctors guess when you're born as to whether you're a boy or a girl. That's insane. Or how about that book that it was in the Bellingham Public School District, right? Highline Public School District, where it was showing like transgender nuns in a pride parade. Nope, that's learning about specific groups of people. So if that book was read in the Seattle Public School District, you couldn't opt your child out because you'd just be a bigoted parent. Even if as a parent, you didn't want your child to read about transgender nuns. I don't know. It's so strange. It's so strange. What parent thinks that that's okay? For a school to say, we're going to teach your child that at birth a doctor guessed what their gender was and you can't do shit about it. What parent thinks that's acceptable? It's wild. And again, here's just one more example. If you're a parent in the Seattle Public School District and you have a kindergartner, well, they could be at school and a guy or something named Brennan Ham might read them a book about a teddy bear who is transgender.
I prefer my name to pronouns, but anything said with respect is great. So they, she, and he all work for me. The full title is Introducing Teddy, a gentle story about gender and friendship. Take a moment and think, what does gender mean? Where have you heard it before or seen it? Thomas the Teddy took a deep breath. I need to be myself, Errol. In my heart, I've always known that I'm a girl Teddy, not a boy Teddy. I wish my name was Tilly, not Thomas. What courage.
That was my soul dying. That's the sound of my soul dying. And in the Seattle Public School District, that's considered LGBTQ inclusive instruction. And you cannot opt your child out of it. If that doesn't get parents riled up, what will? And now, thanks to Let's Go Washington, you have another opportunity to tell the legislature, hey, parents are the primary stakeholders in their kids' lives. And we should be able to know everything our kids are being taught in school. We should be able to opt out of anything that we choose. And we should be able to feel confident that we can send our child to a public school district that's being funded with our hard-earned money. And that if we don't want them to be exposed to radical, nonsensical gender ideology, then they won't be. That's at the core of this fundamentally. And again, get the gender stuff out of it. Anything apparent. Parents should be able to opt their child out of anything. And look, should there be some rules? Like if you're a parent, you're like, I don't want my kid learning algebra, which I don't think you have parents who would do something like that. Then yeah, maybe you have a requirement. Okay, well, they have to have something that's similar to that so they can pass their exams. And so you have to teach them something at home, whatever it is. But parents pay for public schools. The people who run our public schools work for us. Parents should be able to decide what their kids learn and if they don't want their kids to be exposed to a certain lesson. That is not controversial stuff. So we now have another opportunity to tell lawmakers in Olympia that through one of these new initiatives from Let's Go Washington. And I will also say, All of this has again gotten the attention of the federal government. So Harmeet Dhillon, who's the Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights at the U.S. Department of Justice, had shared Ted Cruz's post about my post and said, this is FAFO territory where I live. Oh, love that, girl. Love that. So she pointed out what a lot of people have pointed out is the United States Supreme Court has already ruled on this. Remember, we talked about it, Mahmoud et al. Versus Taylor. So this was the case out of, was it Maine? I think it Maryland, where you had parents of multiple religious backgrounds, including a Muslim parent, who sued the state of Maryland and said we should be able to opt our child out of anything involving radical gender ideology. Say, Christian parent, Muslim parent, and the United States Supreme Court agreed. So this has already been decided by the Supreme Court. I will say, if there is a Seattle Public School District parent who is so inclined, we've already had offers of free legal representation because somebody needs to sue over this. And it looks like maybe Harmeet Dhillon and the federal government are eager to sue over it. But if there's an individual parent, because they always need standing, right? So if there's an individual parent that wants to push back, you can be the face of it. You won't have to pay anything, any legal fees. Reach out to us. We can connect you with the legal team that has agreed behind the scenes to take this fight on. So it's just wild stuff. I mean, it is crazy stuff. I'm so glad Let's Go Washington is not backing down. If there's any member of the media that wants to, again, cover this issue fairly, either of these things, really, we have a list of detransitioners. We have a list of parents who'd be happy to talk to you about wanting to know what's happening with their kids at school. We have a long list of female athletes who would be more than happy to do interviews for your newspaper, come on your news program, and talk to you about the real impacts that Boys and Girls Spaces is having on them. There are plenty of opportunities to cover these initiatives and this issue fairly, and I really hope that the media does. Just crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. All right, coming up next, Bob Ferguson wants anyone who's concerned about their pocketbook to blame Donald Trump and ignore the billions of dollars in new taxes that he has passed. First, I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Why? It's free. Why else? We all need insurance. Why else? You could save thousands of dollars a year. It just takes a little bit of time to do the First Mark Challenge. Basically, you'll set up a conversation with them, firstmarkinsurance.com. They'll go over your current insurance, talk to you about your insurance needs, what's happening with your family, with your kids, with your house, with your cars, whatever else is going on. They'll go out, they'll shop their market of carriers, and they'll come back with their recommendations. And we hear from Undivided viewers and listeners all the time who took the First Mark Challenge, are now members of the First Mark family, and are saving a ton of money. Lisa in Grays Harbor County says that they were able to save nearly 50% a year on their rates for their small business, which is awesome, because as a small business owner myself, First Mark Insurance was also able to help me save money on my business insurance. Daryl says that First Mark saved them $400 over their current insurance. And he says, and that was scheduled to go up even more. So if you want to save some money, make sure you have the best possible insurance for your family. Give First Mark a call. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they're always going to have your best interests in mind. All right. Fear-mongering over Donald Trump is what Governor Bob Ferguson does best. And I will say, he's fairly skilled at it. He can make life more expensive for you and then turn around with a straight face and convince you to blame it on President Donald Trump. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter while you're there to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. So this is not the first time that Governor Bob Ferguson has done this. You'll remember when President Donald Trump came out and initially was announcing these widespread threats of tariffs, that Bob Ferguson was at the port of Seattle with all the cranes and stuff and all that behind him, and like, this is going to destroy our economy and I'm going to always stand up for businesses. And that was weeks after he signed $9.5 billion in new taxes, the largest tax increase in state history, into law, much of those taxes on the backs of who? Business owners in the state of Washington. And so we already called him out for that at the time. And I was so disappointed, not surprised, but at that press conference, The reporters that were there didn't even point out the hypocrisy. Like, hey, man, you know, I know you're worried about how tariffs will impact businesses, which is, you know, okay to be worried about. But what about the $9.5 billion in new taxes that you just passed? Can you explain? Because it seems like you're also hurting businesses. So he's at it again. He had a press conference again about tariffs and the impacts on families and businesses. And here's a little bit of what he said the impact of all of it could be.
But just give you a sense of scale. If you spend $200 a week on your groceries, you'll be spending an extra $128 per month on those groceries as a result of these tariffs. We also predict a 7% spike in the cost of clothes and shoes in the next year, a 14% increase in natural gas prices, which of course push up utility bills, and an increase of 25% in the cost of used cars. No matter how much the president wants us to believe that foreign countries bear the cost of these tariffs, that's simply not true. Multiple studies make clear that the actual costs are passed on to you, consumers in Washington state.
Just got a six cent per gallon increase in the gas tax. Have the Climate Commitment Act, which has increased our gas prices astronomically, which of course increases things like the cost of food. And what else does it increase? The cost of energy. And he's here talking about your energy prices at your home are going to go up because of Donald Trump and his tariffs. You think Bob Ferguson spoke out one time as Attorney General about the impact of the Climate Commitment Act and the climate policies the state was pushing down that do nothing for our environment, literally nothing, that have driven up the cost of gas, the cost of food, the cost of heating your home? That's all okay because my buddies in the Democratic Party did it. But now, tariffs, oh my gosh, it's going to make everything more expensive. And he talks about the cost of clothing and the cost of shoes. Remember this past session when Republicans introduced an amendment that would have given parents a tax holiday for back-to-school shopping? And Democrats said, nah, we can't do that. They don't care about the cost of buying your kids shoes, buying your kids clothes to go back to school. They only care about it if they can blame increased costs on Donald Trump. And I've said this before, that I'm okay with talking about the impacts of tariffs. I think it would be silly not to talk about the impacts of tariffs. For a long time, Republicans have been very critical of tariffs as a tool. And yes, tariffs can have an impact on the cost of things and the economy, and it's perfectly fine to talk about that, but not when you're completely ignoring how you are impacting the cost of things and the economy. And this is something that Jim Walsh pointed out, the chair of the Washington State Republican Party, as Bob Ferguson was gearing up to have this press conference. He said the current governor's latest press conference is a desperate attempt to distract attention away from his budget and policy failures. Bob Ferguson signed an operating budget that spends too much. Bob Ferguson signed $14 billion in new state taxes that still aren't enough to cover his increased spending. Now he's trying to distract people from his failures by whining, Trump, Trump, Trump. Don't let Ferguson fool you. And that's exactly what he's doing. So thank God. I think this was a reporter from the Center Square. Yeah. And Carlene. And she asks Bob Ferguson at the press conference about what Jim Walsh said. And his response is infuriating.
The state's GOP chairman just putting out a statement.
Well, this should be good. This should be good. This should be always entertaining. Yeah, what have you got?
This focus on tariffs is an attempt to distract away from the budget. Do you have any response to that?
I mean, you know, what I will say is I'm someone who believes in data and actual numbers and being prepared. And so, look, if the chairman has a critique of the actual numbers, looking forward to hearing that. I'm not hearing that in a statement. He's not challenging the numbers. He's not saying this isn't real. He's not saying tariffs are good for businesses. If he does, have him come on down to Boon Boon Coffee Shop. I'd invite him to come on down, right? Maybe have a conversation with the folks in our grocery stores who are actually there talking to the customers about what choices they're making in the meat they're purchasing. Maybe have those conversations. Easy to put out a press release and a statement. I get that. That's what he does. I get that. But look, as a governor and as leaders in our communities, right, we need to engage in reality, okay? And reality is what these numbers say. And look, we're going to, you know, and I think the questions go with this. We'll be taking steps through the budget process to what we can do to mitigate these harms, to anticipate loss of general fund revenues, and welcome anyone who wants to be constructive in that effort.
Oh, and by the way, Jim Walsh said, okay, I'll come do that. Happy to talk to the coffee shops and the people at the grocery stores who are being impacted by tariffs. I'd love to do that. Now, let's see if Governor Bob Ferguson is willing to talk to people who are impacted by the taxes that he just passed? Is he willing to talk to people who are impacted by the Climate Commitment Act? By increased property taxes, increased gas taxes? So he's accusing Chair Walsh of only telling half the story while he stands there and only tells half the story. And as I've said, neither approach. If you're going to completely ignore tariffs, you're going to completely ignore state-level taxes, then you're doing people a disservice because people are impacted by all of them. But the impact is far more profound when you have the largest tax increase in state history that isn't temporary. Tariffs, first of all, are many of them have been a threat that has been mitigated by deals. And then you're talking about trying to make deals to make the tariffs temporary, to try to get the means to an end. These tax increases are permanent, and they're only going to compound over time. So Bob Ferguson wants to act holier than thou, totally. He knows that there's a basis to that critique. That's why he gets all shifty and is looking around him and is laughing and, you know, making it about Jim Walsh and Donald Trump. He knows there's a basis to that critique, which is why he won't just answer the question directly. Like, a common sense person would say, look, yeah, we did pass the largest tax increase in state history. We were backed into a corner. I was a new governor. I was handed this budget deficit. And yes, I take responsibility for signing those new taxes. They do have an impact on businesses. I'd be happy to hear from businesses and Washingtonians about that. And at the same time, we're looking at these tariffs and the impacts it's having on real people too. Is that really so hard? Why is that so hard? It's crazy to me. And the question is, why do voters allow him to get away with it? Why do voters allow Democrats, the party in power, the only party that has significant power in the state of Washington, to get away with it, to get away with the gaslighting and the lying? It has to become exhausting at some point. The blaming Donald Trump for something, for everything, has to become exhausting at some point. Speaking of, so we have crisis after crisis in the state of Washington and West Coast states around homelessness and substance abuse and all of these things. And President Donald Trump is not only trying to help, but the federal government is actually helping West Coast cities, whether they like it or not, dig themselves out of the depths of these crises they've created. And the federal government is, of course, getting no credit for it at all. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. Okay, so I was in Europe, as you guys know. And I will say, before I went to Europe, I was warned repeatedly from friends that are Democrats and Republicans. Fred, politics didn't even factor into it. That, oh, Paris is a crap hole. Like, Paris is horrible. It's not safe. You know, you're going to get pickpocketed. You got to be really careful. To the point where I was the least excited about Paris of any place I went on our European trip. We went to London and then Amsterdam and then Paris. And I had been told so many horrible things about Paris that my expectations were very low when I went there. And maybe because they were so low, I was so pleasantly surprised by Paris. And we went and we stayed in a really touristy area. And I've got some pictures here I could show you. We stayed in a really touristy area. And yes, like, did I go to the slums of Paris? No. But we were off the beaten path a little bit. We went, you know, to some markets where would I have gotten out of the car and walked around? No, because they probably would have tried to steal something from me. So, like, we went through some shady areas in Paris. But I will tell you, the entire time we were there, despite all of the words of caution that had been given to me by my friends who are progressives and, yes, friends who are Republican, I did not see one street in Paris, one street that was worse than 3rd and Pine in Seattle. I did not see one street that was as bad as 12th and Jackson in Seattle. And I sure as hell did not see any single street that was as bad as the Tenderloin in San Francisco. And I thought about this as I was on my flight home and I saw this video that was put out by our friend JJ Smith. And it was just the latest video he had taken in the Tenderloin district in San Francisco. Nicole, do you have this? And it was apocalyptic. No, that's not slow motion. Those are people who are leaned over from fentanyl. And it looks like a scene out of a zombie apocalypse. I didn't see anything even remotely close to that anywhere I went in Europe, for all the talk about how bad Paris and other places have gotten. And it really made me think, like, we talk down to all these other areas and all these other countries. And frankly, you know, I was even in Mexico City not all that long ago. And there are some slums in Mexico City that will make you grateful to be an American. But I still didn't see depths of suffering like that. And so you would think, like, Seattle's supposed to be a world-class city. San Francisco at some point was a world-class city. You know, Oregon, Portland, they're supposed to be these cool places. You would think that they would do anything in their power to fix that. That for any elected official in any position of authority who saw scenes like that, that they would say, this looks like a third world country. This looks like an apocalyptic hellscape, and we're going to fix it. But of course they don't. It just gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And you have the Trump administration that's finally coming in and trying to help these blue cities dig themselves out of these deep, deep crises. And they're getting absolutely no credit for it. And the drug side of this is one big place where this is happening right now. So, for instance, down in Oregon, there's been all of these. And I'll say, too, there's different types of intervention, right? So you've seen what's happening in D.C. and in Chicago. And look, I think that there is room for disagreement about whether the federal government should come in and like federalize the police force in a place like Chicago. Frankly, if I were the mayor of Chicago, I wouldn't like that idea either, because there's got to be this separation. A little bit different in D.C., where they do have, the president does have some authority because, of course, the White House and the Capitol are in D.C. But you even see this pushback from Democrats, even when it can't be construed as overreach. For example, the DEA, the FBI, Homeland Security, etc., they've always operated within these blue cities. Like, there's always been FBI investigations and DEA investigations and ATF investigations happening on the streets of Seattle and the streets of Portland and the streets of LA. And they've never had an issue with any of it, right, until it's President Donald Trump doing it. And there's no accusation of overreach there, but they've ramped up efforts. And if you were the mayors of these cities, you should be celebrating it. Like, hey, this isn't overreach at all. These are federal agencies taking out serious offenders, helping clean up our streets from drug traffickers, etc. They should be able to celebrate it, but they absolutely can't. They just cannot bring themselves to do it. For instance, there's been a couple big drug busts all up and down the West Coast. This one was in Oregon, the United States Attorney's Office for the District of Oregon. Mexican national unlawfully residing in Oregon faces federal charges for trafficking large quantities of fentanyl and heroin. His name was Gildorado Garcia, 45. He was an illegal alien from Mexico, and he was distributing fentanyl and trafficking heroin. They found him with 43 pounds of illicit drugs. Think of how many lives saved. And again, go back in your mind to the scenes of what's happening on the streets of Portland and San Francisco and Seattle. And this should be all over the news. Like, hey, illegal from Mexico was responsible for contributing to the suffering that we're seeing. Here's another bust. Three Hondurans unlawfully residing in Oregon arrested for trafficking fentanyl in downtown Portland. And the interesting thing about this is we've been talking to Andrea Suarez for years with We Heart Seattle. I mean, going back 3 years, she was talking about the Honduran nationals who were trafficking these deadly drugs on the streets of West Coast cities. She'd met some of them. Hondurans in the United States illegally trafficking drugs that are killing American citizens and creating these horrific scenes in once great cities. So it's been known for years that illegals from countries like Honduras and Mexico were contributing to our drug crisis. And now the Trump administration is coming in and they're removing them from the country. And there's no like celebration. Why? Oh, because that's immigration enforcement. Oh, and we can't celebrate the federal government arresting illegals, even if they're selling deadly drugs. It's wild. FBI Director Kash Patel had this long post where he was focused specifically on the work that FBI Portland has been doing, and it's phenomenal. He said, this FBI will not tolerate our great cities becoming victimized by violent crime. Here's just some of what happens when the FBI gets after it in Portland and crushes violent crime. They said just in recent days, seizure of 1,200 grams of fentanyl, 9.5 pounds of meth, $40,000 in currency from the illicit drug trade. They arrested someone who was a Mexican national in the U.S. illegally, arrested two subjects, and seized 6.6 ounces of fentanyl powder. Both suspects were Honduran nationals in the U.S. illegally. They made one arrest for assault on a federal officer during protests at the ICE facility. FBI's threat assessment group partnered with police to immediately address an incident where a Portland resident posted a threat to commit a shooting at a local church. So they're in there and they're doing all of this work in the city of Portland. And of course, the media won't touch this stuff. And you don't see any of these Democratic leaders coming out with any degree of nuance and saying, hey, we're proud to partner with the federal government on this stuff. We don't support some of their other immigration enforcement, but if they want to get drug dealers, drug traffickers, human traffickers off our streets, arms dealers, by all means, Donald Trump, come do it. No, they won't touch it. And I had mentioned this before we left on vacation. There was that massive drug bust with the DEA in Seattle, with the help of ICE, and it was also done in concert with the Seattle Police Department. But remember I mentioned that the Seattle Police Department didn't come to the press conference? And I said, I guarantee that's because some of the people arrested were in the country illegally and they didn't want to be seen as helping the Trump administration get illegals off the street, even if those illegals are trafficking drugs. Our friend Jason Rance at SeattleRed.com came out with this story about that bust. Accused drug dealer was deported four times. So one of the guys, the drug dealers arrested in that major operation that Seattle PD's leadership like didn't want to be seen as being part of, he'd been arrested and deported four times. And so he came back into the U.S. illegally a fifth time. His name was Aubryn Daenerys Hernandez Velasquez, an illegal from Mexico, an extensive criminal record, including three convictions for drug trafficking, four illegal entries, and a recent arrest for unlawful possession of a firearm. And he gets caught up in this drug operation, arrested for a fifth time. And the media isn't covering. And they certainly, they'll cover the drug bust, but they won't say, oh, and one of the main dealers as part of the drug bust has come into the country illegally five times, has drug trafficking convictions, and was arrested for unlawful possession of a firearm. They won't do it because they don't want the public to know that some of these people who are here illegally are very bad people, very dangerous human beings, because it goes against their entire narrative. They would rather protect those criminals and perpetrate hoaxes than dare speak the truth about what's happening with the crime crisis. For instance, well, another story where we're gone, this whole firefighter hoax. Like, the media hasn't learned its lesson on this by now? So you probably saw these headlines everywhere. This is from the Associated Press. Two firefighters battling Washington State wildfire arrested by Border Patrol. And I'll even admit, I saw that and I'm like, okay, Trump. Took it a little too far this time. I mean, look at that picture. They made it seem like ICE went out to the front lines of a raging wildfire and scooped two guys off the fire lines because they were just in the country illegally. And to this day, you go back, and that's what a lot of the headlines suggest. No, it turns out that this was a contract. These were people working for a contractor that was under investigation by the federal government for wrongdoing. And while they were carrying out that very legitimate investigation into this contractor, they found out that there were two individuals who were working for the contractor who were in the country illegally. And one of them, Jose Burton Cruz Estrada, is a convicted meth dealer who's had an order of removal from the country for 10 years. And they weren't even actively fighting the wildfire, by the way. Because that contractor was about to have its license pulled. The federal government's no longer even allowing them to work on the fires. So not quite the story of them going out and, oh my gosh, these heroes battling a wildfire, torn off the front lines by ICE. No, they were hanging out around about to get their contract pulled by the federal government as part of a different investigation. And they found out, oh, dude, Jose here, he's a convicted drug trafficker who should have been out of the country 10 years ago. But do you think the media is going to come out and correct the narrative that they spun to make everyone hate Donald Trump and hate ICE enforcement and say, hey, you know, this is great because we're trying to solve our drug crisis. So every time we can get convicted drug traffickers off the streets, that's a good thing. No, they can't do it. They absolutely just are incapable of doing it. And I have a story coming up in the show next about this horrible case of the stabbing on the train. It's just an example of, yeah, like I've really come to believe the media, not talking about individual people, but the free press in America really is actively working against the interests of the country and against the interests of Americans by manipulating them, by hiding the truth from them, by pushing false narratives and hoaxes. I used to hate it. The news media is the enemy of the American people, but I'm sorry, it's true. It's so true. And this next story, which is just sad, I think speaks to that quite a bit. It made me cry reading it over the weekend, but we'll get to that in a moment. First, in fall, it's September, so you're running out of time to register to attend the Engage conference at Meidenbauer Center, which is happening October 22nd and 23rd. It's being put on by our friends at the Rental Housing Association of Washington. I'm going to participate in it with my friend Jonathan Cho. We're going to talk about how the media covers housing policy in the state of Washington. It'll be a lot of fun, but there's a ton of other panels if you're interested in housing policy in politics in Washington. So sign up, go to rhawa.org, rhawa.org, sign up for the Engage conference. And while you're there, if you're a landlord in the state of Washington, make sure to become a member of RHA, rhawa.org. They can help you navigate the complex world of housing policies and rules and regulations. So you really do want to make sure you have them on your side, rhawa.org. Okay, so carrying on this theme of, and this makes me so sad, and it really does make me grateful that I left mainstream media when I did, because it's not redeemable. It's really not. And I've told you guys before, I've come to believe that the media, as it's currently constructed, just can't be fixed. And one of the reasons I know for sure it can't be fixed is they refuse to learn lessons. They refuse to acknowledge failures. And they're incapable of growing and changing. And this story underscores that completely. So I'm not going to obviously play the video. You've probably all seen it. This Ukrainian refugee in Charlotte who was stabbed to death from behind by this guy who's just been, I mean, he's the poster child for a revolving criminal justice system, and got out on cash bail, you know, had some issues clearly with mental health, but lifelong criminal. And the video shows this Ukrainian refugee came here for a better life. You know, she just got off work, coming in on the train, sitting down. Within just a couple minutes, he pulls out this pocket knife and stabs her repeatedly in the neck from behind. And there's so many horrifying parts to this video. The lack of people coming to her aid was pretty startling to me. That just kind of sit there as she's bleeding out was pretty startling to me. I guess it's not a surprise considering I think it's like the Daniel Penny effect. Like, you know, you prosecuted a guy for coming to people's aid on a train and tried to ruin his life. And so now people are trying to second guess, you know, maybe doing the right thing. So it was already bad, right? And I know that there's some conservatives who want to jump on these narratives about race and crime, like immediately, and just look at the stabbing itself and say, you know, black perpetrator, white victim. And I do think that there is a space to discuss like black on white crime, which is far disproportionate to white on black crime. But had the media immediately came out and reported on this and talked about, you know, there's a lot of conversation about the crime crisis on public transportation and all this. You could have talked about it through the lens of the mental health crisis. You could have talked about it through the lens of this guy had been arrested repeatedly and released repeatedly. There was an angle on cash bail that you could have talked about here. Had the media came out and talked about any of those angles of this story, or even just covered the horrific nature of it, like this brutal story, then I don't know that it would have been, it wouldn't have taken on the life I think that it's taken on. But instead, what does the media do? Well, in the first 24 to 48 hours, they ignore it entirely.
And there were conservatives on social media who were doing searches of all the major news sites, New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, CBS, NBC. No coverage of it whatsoever. Of this. And then they were comparing it to, you know, you have this black man who stabs this white woman to death in cold blood on the train. Zero stories versus like all the stories done on George Floyd. And all the stories done on Daniel Penny, who actually like came in and saved someone, and all the stories on him and how he overdid it. And then this woman on the train just brutally murdered. No stories at all. So they ignored it. And then that, yes, made sane, rational people online be like, why are they ignoring this story? It doesn't fit into their race narrative. It's black on white crime, so we don't care about it. Now, if the role was reversed and it was a white person who came up behind a black person and stabbed them repeatedly to death on a train, we all know it would have been wall-to-wall coverage, especially if the white person walked off and said, I got that black girl, I got that black girl. And that's what happened in this case. You can hear in enhanced audio this black man walk off and say something to the effect of, I got that white girl, I got that white girl. If the roles had been reversed, and it had been a white person who stabbed a young black woman who was sitting there peacefully, innocently, then it would have been all over the main news outlets. We already know that. So I don't think it was a particular surprise to me that the media ignored it. It didn't fit into their race narrative and didn't fit into their crime narrative, whatever it was. But I even guess I never ceases to amaze me how shameless they can really be. So they're raked over the coals for not covering it for like 48 hours. And then they decide, okay, we've got to cover it. But how do we cover our asses? So here's how they cover it. Two examples from Axios and Politico. Axios. The gruesome video of the fatal knife attack on Irina Zaratska on a light rail car in Charlotte is drawing attention from mega influencers seeking to elevate the issue of violent urban crime and accuse mainstream media of undercovering shocking cases. Politico. Ukrainian refugee killed in North Carolina gets dragged into political messaging war. She's not getting dragged into anything. She's dead. The only thing she's getting dragged into is an early grave. So now they'll cover it, but only through the lens of, oh, look at MAGA making a big deal out of this because the perpetrator's black and the victim is white. Shameless. Disgusting. And no self-awareness. No self-awareness of the very salient points that were being made about how the media chooses to cover certain crimes while ignoring others entirely. Like I saw, you know, somebody posting about George Floyd and how he got all these celebrations and statues and a gold casket and, you know, years worth of media coverage about his death at the hands of Minneapolis police officer. And the type of people that the media chooses to pick up and elevate and celebrate. And then someone like this young, white, Ukrainian refugee. Is nothing. Nothing. And the only reason it's a story now is because MAGA's making it a story. It's genuinely disgusting. A couple clips from the network news shows. Van Jones on accusing MAGA and conservatives of race mongering by paying so much attention to this case.
We don't know why that man did what he did. And for Charlie Kirk to say, we know he did it because she's white, when there's no evidence of that, it's just pure race mongering, hate mongering. It's wrong.
Yeah, no, there is evidence of it. There is evidence of it because as he walked down the train, her blood dripping from him, he said, I got that white girl, I got that white girl. And also, Van Jones, when you guys have obsessed over other instances, like in George Floyd's case or Daniel Penny's case, there was no evidence that Daniel Penny put a chokehold on that man because he was black. Yet what did you immediately do? You made it about race. So when a white person does it, or even a white person defends people, then it's about race. Oh, you killed that man because he's black. Without any evidence of it. In this case, you have actual evidence where the perpetrator himself brings up race. And you say, oh, there's no evidence. This was racially motivated. How anyone can watch CNN anymore is a mystery to me. How anyone can watch MSNBC anymore is a mystery to me. And I'm not saying like Fox News is perfect.
It's just the other side of the same coin from like MSNBC. But when it comes to Fox News, they are consistent in covering crime. They are consistent in highlighting the crime crisis. And it doesn't matter the color of the skin of the perpetrator or the victim. But I mean, just disgusting. I'm not even going to get into the Brian Stelter stuff. There's just like all these Brian Stelter, Breonna Keeler, all of them making it about Donald Trump and MAGA when covering the story. It's really disgusting. It's one of the worst instances I've seen of media malpractice. And they don't get it. They don't get it. None of them. Like they're not capable of having a moment of self-reflection to say, okay, why didn't we cover this? Why didn't we cover this for 48 hours? And when we did cover it, why do we make it a political angle? You know, why not just cover what happened? Why didn't we cover the angle of this guy being in and out of the criminal justice system or cash bail? When you're not capable as a member of the media of correcting yourself, of being introspective, you can't be effective and you can't be trusted. And so, yeah, I mean, people want to say they're the enemy of the American people. Maybe that sounds a little harsh, but I think the media is responsible for a great deal of the shortcomings of this country. The media is complicit in a great deal of what's wrong with this country. You can look at that in Washington State with the homeless crisis and the drug crisis if you want. You can look at it in Chicago with the crime crisis. If the media was doing its job every single day and holding powerful people accountable, we wouldn't have crises that get to those levels because they would have been fixed a long time ago because politicians don't want to lose their jobs. So if the media was holding politicians accountable, that would lead citizens to hold politicians accountable, and they wouldn't just be satisfied with these crises that we've had that have gotten worse and worse and worse over the years. So the media, yeah, in a lot of ways, it is the enemy of the American people. And that's a shame because it should be the opposite. The media should be a champion for the American people. The media is sometimes the only entity standing in the breach that's supposed to hold the people who have power over us accountable, and they refuse to do it when those people are Democrats. Shameful. All right, coming up next, we'll get to the Daily Subscriber Show poll and your comments. Man, I missed you guys. I really did. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about our vacations. Maybe not. We don't want to, you know, be vacation braggers. We just love taking vacations once in a while. All right, with trade deals affecting global markets, the uncertainty of AI, new digital coins seemingly every day, can't keep up with those. Are you concerned about how much risk your retirement portfolio is exposed to? Is it time to get back to basics? Well, if you think so, join Bulwark Capital Zach Abraham for his Back to Basics live webinar. It's happening October 2nd at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. The webinar is going to be a frank discussion on the basic fundamentals of value investing, a perspective on the outlook for the remainder of 2025, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. Hear directly from Zach as he shares insights in this free Back to Basics webinar, October 2nd at 3:30 p.m. You could register for free right now. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. We're also going to have a return this week of Doge Watch. We've been off for a couple weeks, although I think we're changing the name. I did say once Doge kind of goes away, which I feel like Doge has gone away a little bit, they're just letting it have like a sail off into the sunset. But there's still so much need for a Doge style eye on things that are happening. So anyway, look forward to that. Okay. Oh, wow. Nicole made a little graphic of our vacation. Nicole, hello, Nicole. People would like to see you, I think.
Sure.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I can't pull up the vacation pic while I'm on, but
that's okay. Then I can. Where'd you go?
I went to Greece. Island hopped. That was my first time island hopping.
Gosh.
Oh, it was amazing.
Yeah. Your pictures were good.
They were. It actually exceeded my expectations. Mm-hmm. I knew I was going to love it, but it exceeded those expectations. All the people were so nice. Oh my God, all the cats.
Saw Nicole took a million pictures of cats.
There were cats everywhere. But you know what? People are so nice to them. Everybody asked me how many cats I was bringing home with me. And I was like, oh no, these cats have it made. These cats do not want to come home with me. Everybody feeds them. The locals take care of them. They take them to get help if they need help. Yeah. They feed them. Oh, it is. It's just beautiful. And like you were saying with the crime on the streets and stuff, mm-hmm. I mean, there was some graffiti on like the nicest buildings, beautiful buildings. There was some Antifa and some, you know, Hamas crap and stuff like that. But for the most part, I mean, they really keep things clean, especially on the islands. Athens was there was a couple streets we went down in Athens that were a little questionable, but for the most part, they really take care of their stuff. And even the you know, the ruins are, mm-hmm. are, I guess, just the older buildings really yeah. that are, you know, considered ancient, but they're all dilapidated. And I mean, there's the obvious ruins that are ancient, but just the older buildings that they don't allow anybody to touch. So it's like nice building, dilapidated, but still yeah. like nobody touches it. Everybody leaves it alone. And they're like, that's old. So we just leave it alone. It's yeah. amazing.
Oh, I do love that. So I love beautiful. It. Anyway. We won't bother people too much with our vacation. You could show a pic though. I know Miranda was on vacation. Hold on. You don't want to hear about my year. Everyone's been to the places I've been in Europe. But
I think you went to some great shows.
We did. We went. Oh, I'll tell you a story about boobs if you want to hear it. Okay. We went our last night in Paris. We went to Moulin Rouge.
Yes.
And it was just a boob show. It was like, oh my gosh, you get out there and then they just rip off their clothes. And there was this mom who brought her 14 and 15 year old kids and they were right by the stage with us. This kid was front and center in the middle of the stage. He's 14 years old and all of a sudden he's surrounded by boobs. And I was like, this kid is having the time of his life. Absolutely.
I'm sure there's a warning at the beginning. I'm sure parents knew it was coming.
It was just a lot of boobs.
But yeah. I went to a gay naked beach. I mean, there were some definite nude beaches, and you never know what you're gonna get. I think at some point it was, you know, just gay. Now it doesn't matter. Everybody's invited, and
yeah.
But yeah, there were definitely some nude beaches and some people that, you know, yeah. I appreciate that they don't care.
Yeah,
and that they're very comfortable in their own skin.
You want to go to the nude beach? Go to the nude beach, but not when it's in the middle of the city of Seattle and people have to watch people embaiting all over the beach, pleasuring themselves.
That was
But yeah, we had a good time. My mom, it was a great retirement trip for her and stuff. So we appreciate you guys letting us go. I did a little business while I was there. I had high tea in London with Andy Ngo. Andy, of course, wrote Unmasked, literally the book about Antifa, and had covered Antifa so long in Portland that he had to flee, essentially, and live in London. And so Andy and I had high tea, I know. But it was just so great, and we talked about how Antifa is there and infiltrating things and back here and stuff. All right, we'll save the subscriber show poll for after comments. Let's do comments first and just a little change today. On the new Let's Go Washington initiatives, Rick says...
I guess I can stay on for this.
Then. Yeah. My grandpa used to tell me stories of scavenging for food and survival during the Great Depression. He'd lose his mind today if he knew a central issue is confusion over one's gender. Oh, there's no confusion, Rick. There's no confusion. Necro Two Shoes, liberals see these truth teller interviews and the first thing they think is they need preschool gender books. Yeah. Truth Tellers was great this time. I hope you guys have caught up on all the Truth Tellers interviews. I love the one with John Popola that we aired on Sundays with subscribers. So we'll be putting out clips and stuff of all of them. But
some really cool info in there.
Yeah. Right? and give us feedback on, you know, we do Truth Tellers whenever we have an extended vacation. We do two vacations a year, one kind of around this time, and then we'll do one the last 2 weeks of the year. So we'll probably do two Truth Tellers again. So if you have any feedback, guests you'd like to hear from, we'd love to hear from you.
Matthew Wielicki. I love the climate story.
Dr. Wielicki,
The Arizona record temperature because of a jet plane. Look for that story. It's good.
It was good. Denise Young, is there going to be a place where we can go to sign these initiatives? So go to letsgowa.com, I think it is. Letsgowa.com, and they'll have all the information on there. But again, I think you'll probably be mailed one if you sign the others. On Elon retweeting me, which was so nice. My phone starts blowing up. Elon retweeted you. And I'm on vacation. I'm like, why did I post this one thing while I was on vacation? But I'm glad I did.
Yeah.
Requiem Delta. So even Muslim families cannot opt out of LGBTQ instruction. Nope. Not if they're in the city of Seattle, they can't. And they need to start speaking up if that bothers them. Cry Mirror says, best advertisement for homeschooling I've ever seen. Yes.
Absolutely. Everything that comes out of Seattle Public Schools right now.
It's just
crazy. Just a picture of Chris Reigdahl. That's your advertisement for homeschooling right now.
What a sanctimonious prick. Kathleen Bros. I mean, he really is. He really is. Ferguson. I expect this Marxist legislature will try to pass a law outlawing homeschooling or send CPS to their homes to make sure parents adhere to the state's approved curriculum. Oh, I wouldn't put it past. If we somehow managed to get school choice in this state, I wouldn't put it past them to pass a law that says, as part of homeschooling, you have to teach radical gender ideology and have some sort of method to prove that you're doing it. It's just wild. On Ferguson attacking Trump's tariffs, but ignoring his own taxes, Rob's Pierre can't balance a budget, but there's always money to fight the Cheeto.
Always
money to fight the Cheeto.
I just think it's funny because he says that Jim Wall should come and have a conversation. He literally, people are asking him for conversations. We have Annalie Wilson who is asking to have a conversation with him, and he will not sit down with anybody that doesn't, you know, want to have a conversation about the same thing that he agrees with.
We should try to facilitate that. Maybe let's reach out to his office and say, you know, here's an interview we did. They want to meet with him and are saying that he hasn't responded. Yeah. Is he willing to meet with female athletes? Mm-hmm. I think that would be good. On the feds cleaning up blue cities but getting no credit, Andy Silly of the $10 Super Chat. So nice to hear Brandy almost properly pronounce San Francisco like a native. What? Why? San Francisco? Is there only one way to say it?
San Francisco
is the place to be if you're a fentanyl addict. La Picket. Feds must step in for Americans when states don't do their jobs. Mama Pillow, how many deaths in Chicago is okay? When do they say we need help? Galen Turner, did you notice that Sideshow Bob posted these were literally firefighters on the firefighter story? So that makes Bob literally a liar. Yes, he is. Let's get to the subscriber poll since it's this topic. I asked subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X, would you support Trump sending troops into Seattle to help fight crime? And in the poll, I said it could be either National Guard troops or active duty troops. So would you support the Trump administration sending in troops to fight crime in Seattle? Nicole, yay or nay? Well, I gave three options, actually. Yes, no, or yes, but only with the city's permission.
Well, I'm not sure that crime is the problem right now. The drugs and the
Well, crime it comes
goes,
with drugs.
It goes deeper. Yeah. Yes. So cleaning up Seattle, yes. I support that, I guess. I mean, I'm with you on you can't just have all these troops move in if Seattle is fighting it. Mm-hmm. You can't have this, you know, war between the government, local and national. I don't really see that as a feasible thing. That's not a good look.
Yeah.
Not a good look.
I say no. Well, if Seattle agrees,
obviously.
Yes. But it's a slippery slope. I don't want to see it. I certainly wouldn't want a Democratic president coming in and like forcing red states to do something crazy. And here's the other thing that I don't believe the Trump administration is being fully kind of honest about. There are a lot of methods, as we discussed on the show today, for them to help fight crime in these cities that aren't coming in and sending troops or whatever it is. Like I said, the FBI, the DEA, the ATF, they've worked hand in hand with local law enforcement for years on some of these major investigations, and they continue to do so. So just continue to ramp that up. Hey, get more, flood the DEA on the streets. The DEA has the authority to disrupt drug trafficking operations. There's nothing stopping them from doing that today. So they have the ability to fight crime. The ATF, how many of those gang members in Chicago are using illegal or stolen guns? That is in the purview of the ATF. The ATF can handle that. So I don't think you need troops per se, but 82% of subscribers say yes, you would support it.
Yeah.
12% said, yeah, I guess, but only with the city's permission.
I do see a danger to it as well. I was talking to somebody from Chicago that I met on my trip in Greece, and he said he was very liberal. His girlfriend was quite conservative. Mm-hmm. And he said, though, if Trump sends them in, there will be bloodshed on both sides. And so it will be a war between the gangs. Like those people that are killing people in Chicago will have no issue with killing Trump's people.
But they're killing cops, too. I mean, they've killed Chicago police officers.
Well, the cops kind of, they do, but those people have kind of been hands off, right? So the city of Chicago, so what this guy is telling me is that the cops just kind of let them do their thing.
Yeah.
They kill each other off, right? So that's why there's so many deaths every weekend, is because they're kind of killing each other off. So they just kind of let them do their thing and they stay out of it. If Trump's people come in and start getting involved in that, there's going to be officers that die. And so that's what he said. He said there will be people that die, and that would be sad. So obviously.
Yeah, I agree. It can't be a reason not to do it, though. I mean, you know, we can't, for instance, cops put themselves in harm's way every single day when they do their jobs. And if they were to say, well, if our life is in danger, then we're not going to do it, then we would have no cops.
I'm just saying, but if Trump goes in unwelcome and unwanted and immediately his guys are killed, but that's not going to go well.
And I've said that about the drug cartel, right? Like the drug cartel is a powerful force, and you know, they're at some point, if they're losing too many drugs to seizures, if they're losing too many of their human assets or whatever it is, they're going to fight back and it's going to be deadly. And, right. and but I don't think that's a reason not to do it, right? Because the alternative is we have hundreds of thousands of people dying mm-hmm. on our streets. And not just that, if you don't, you know, this idea of just let them die off. We also have billions and billions and billions of taxpayer dollars that are being funneled into those things as well. So we all have a stake in it. But mm-hmm. it is, it's an interesting conversation for
sure.
We
just need to enforce laws.
Enforce the laws.
Enforce laws. I mean, these people get arrested. Keep them in jail.
Yeah.
If they, like, just enforce laws. Keep an eye on these people.
I agree. A couple more comments on the poll. Nesser says, yes, please, and hurry. Chris, some level of government should be responsible when the locals blatantly disregard the law. And I think that is a question about how bad does it have to get? But I always say, like, the voters vote for those people who allow it to be mm-hmm. this cesspool of crime and violence. What's frustrating is for the voters who didn't vote for it, right? Mm-hmm. Even though we're in the minority, you know, who's watching out for us? Because they're not. Right. We're being victimized. Our tax dollars are going to, you know, nothingness for the homeless and drug crisis. So who has our back? That is the frustrating thing. All right, back to viewer comments on other topics, on the media ignoring the Charlotte attack, then blaming MAGA. Lolly says, judges need to be held accountable. He never should have been out. Hello, Watermelon. Dems can't decide who they care about most, Ukrainian refugees or career criminals. Oh, they can. They care about the career criminals. Let's see, a couple other super chats. Moon Goddess, welcome home, Brandy and Miranda to Nicole. Thank you. And Miranda's mm-hmm. actually at my house right now in the comments. So she's still technically here. Your mom goes back tomorrow.
Your mom posted a picture of them on a walk with your dogs.
Yeah, they walked my dogs this morning. I missed my dogs so much on vacation, I will say. President America, thoughts on latest developing news in Congress? I don't know what developing news you're talking about. There's so much. What's the latest developing news in Congress?
I don't know. Let me look into that. Yeah.
And get back to you tomorrow for sure. I'm not sure which developing news you're talking about. All right. We'll get to our closing sanity check. Thank you, Nicole. Yeah. Next. But first, if you're trying to sell your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. You know, I had this person email me who didn't reach out to Wes Jones, used somebody else that their friend used as a real estate agent. And then when that went terribly south, then they reached out to Wes Jones. Oh, they were like, man, I should have reached out to Wes Jones to begin with. I know. I don't give you guys bad advice, okay? I only give you good advice. So reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Wes can give you a good layout of what the market is doing right now. He's been in this industry for a long time in Washington State. He knows, I mean, down to the neighborhoods very, very well and how they perform. And, you know, one of the things he's noticing right now is homes are sitting on the market longer. For a long time, that was not the case. You know, you didn't have to do much work at all and they'd get snatched up. So it's a different thought process when you have a market doing what it's doing right now. And so Wes is going to walk you through all of that, explain his strategy, how he's going to go about it, and really look at you as a teammate in trying to make sure that your house gets sold as quick as possible and for the highest possible price, which is what everyone wants. So he's going to walk with you every step of the way. So start by going to sellwithwes.com. Use their home value calculator, totally free. You can figure out, get a kind of an estimate on how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. And then Wes will give you a free market analysis and you can go from there. So sellwithwes.com, it really just is a better way to sell your home. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. You know, I always get bummed. So first of all, I can't talk when I come back from vacation. I can't talk good.
Well, you did pretty well today.
I come back from, no, I was all over the place today. Total rambling
mess.
There was
a couple words. There was one word you said
apologize.
That I was like, wow, that was an interesting slur of words.
I apologize. Whenever I come back from vacation, I always forget how to do my job. So, you know, a little rusty. But I also, I'm missing one full day of sleep. Because mm-hmm. we the time difference. Mm-hmm. So I decided to stay up on the airplane. I left Paris at 5:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. and I arrived here at 5:30 p.m. So missing a whole day of sleep, mm-hmm. basically. A day just evaporated into nothingness. So I can't talk good today. And I do apologize for that. But I always, on vacation, when we miss little things, I know Nicole and I both have news FOMO. Mm-hmm. So little things were happening. And so I just wanted to play this. President Donald Trump says he's paying attention to what's happening in Portland. Of course, there's been this ongoing occupation outside the ICE facility. And he has Antifa's number.
These are paid terrorists, okay? These are paid agitators. These are professional. I watched that last night. I'm very good at this stuff. These are paid agitators. They get paid money by radical left groups, not radical right groups, radical left groups. and they get paid a lot of money. And you see it with the signs. You know, they all have perfect signs and are printed. They look as good as that sign. Those signs aren't made in basements. They're made at professional printing offices, and they cost a lot of money. These are paid agitators, and they're very dangerous for our country. And when we go there, if we go to Portland, we're going to wipe them out. They're going to be gone, and they're going to be gone fast. They won't even stand the fight. They will not stay there. They've ruined that city. I have people that used to live in Portland. They've left. Most of them have left. But what they've done to that place is it's like living in hell.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Although the one disagreement I'll have with the president is some of the most dangerous Antifa types are not paid. They do that stuff for free. That's even more disturbing. That has been our closing sanity check. Again, great to be back. Thank you guys for letting us take a little vacation. We sure do appreciate it. We appreciate all of you, but especially our paid subscribers who, you know, help make this show possible. So if you want to become a paid subscriber, get access to our exclusive Sunday shows, go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and just click on the banner that says support the show. Shop our merch store while you're there so you can tell everyone while you're driving down the freeway that you have more common sense than they do. Pick up one of our great triggering bumper stickers while you're there. Undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.